welcome to iDeveloper Live episode 15. With me in the studio, Mr. Simon Wolfe.
Hello, everybody.
See, we're sat here. It's a bit cosy in my office. We didn't go up to the studio, which we probably should have done. So we're just huddled around my desk. And Simon, you're just behind the iDeveloper Live episode 15 little yellow box. That doesn't really live on top of your head,
there
does it?
Go. Well, it covers the shine.
Yeah. Well, I'll try and move that when you're speaking in a moment. So it's great to see we have some listeners out there today. So Simon, before we go any further, just explain to people who you are.
I'm Simon Wolfe. I run a company called Otter Software. I obviously develop Mac and iOS applications, and for the last year now I've been independent, working for myself, writing applications for other people, a range of things, mostly on the Mac, oddly enough, things from an application for the English Cricket Board through to an application for golf professionals. I'm doing some work for Zara Studios at the moment, so it's a fairly wide range of things.
And did you see, as if by magic, where you were saying that, the iDeveloper Live has moved off of your forehead?
It was almost some very slick animation.
And now we can see that you are just as shiny as me on top. There we are. We're trying some new headset mics, and they're a little bit uncomfortable, so if I keep twitching and fiddling. Right, where are we going to start? NS Conference. You were at NS Conference. Did you enjoy yourself?
I did, actually. It was really good. By far the best year. Not to say that previous years were bad, but this one was superb. Really, really good range of speakers. I think we all raised the bar this year. Very, very professional. You would have thought that pretty much all of them were professional speakers, and that was their day job. Really, really good wide range of subjects were covered. Everything from sort of very technical through to sessions about design. It was really good. It was very good. The venue was great. Food was good. Accommodation was good. All round, a brilliant, brilliant conference. A great 3 days.
Brilliant. So any highlight? Any real big highlight? Other than Graham Lee. Everyone knows Graham Lee's always a highlight.
Well, Graham Lee's pratfall was definitely a highlight.
Yeah, that was my moment. Now, for people who weren't there, we better just explain this. We had a little bit of a paper aeroplane making contest as part of the more serious moments of the conference. And Graham decided that rather than just throw his paper aeroplane, he was going to run with his aeroplane and pretend he was out. But actually, it ended in a spectacular crash as he tripped over a cable. So it was a real sort of movie crash. He went bang, straight down, and provided us with lots of entertainment. So Graham, I can see you out there in the chat room. So we're just going to say, hello, Graham. Get well soon. Any other moments?
Yeah, I'll tell you what was really good.
That's motorbikes going by. I didn't shut the windows.
It's very noisy. The labs were really good. They were new to the conference this year. Really, really worthwhile. Getting some expert knowledge from peers and people who are specialists in their field. And I think they certainly added an extra element to the whole conference, really. Just having the ability to go and talk to people, get your problems solved, coding problems. That was really good. A great addition.
Yeah, that was something we tried for new. Wasn't sure if it's going to work. I think until about halfway through the conference, people didn't really catch on in what they were. And of course, unlike Apple's labs, we're not doing labs with the actual Apple engineers. Yep. So it's not like, it's just with your peers, I think you said to me earlier on today. However, having your peers look at your code in a slightly sort of more formal format, trying to work together to do it. I saw lots of people coming down from the lab saying, yes, my problem was fixed. And it wasn't necessarily because the people in that lab were absolute specialists in that, but just as indies, sometimes it's just great to have someone look at your code. And I don't know about you, but I get really nervous about sort of posting my code to Stack Overflow or something like that, because I know the moment I do it,
yep,
I'm going to spot the problem. And everyone's going to say, oh, you're a great big numpty or whatever else it is. So actually just being able to sneak into a corner. And you had a bit of a design review, didn't you, on one of your products?
I did, with Mr. Lee.
And were you a numpty?
Yes, obviously. But it didn't make me cry, so it wasn't that bad.
We're not talking about Graham Lee, of course.
We're talking about the one who knows stuff.
Yeah, we wouldn't necessarily take design stuff to Graham Lee, but there we are. Oh dear, well, people are feeling a bit sorry for Graham in the chat room, but that's fine. Someone has to, I guess. So I'm glad Mr. Spectre out there is being nice to
Graham. Excellent. A bit of TLC for him.
The rest of us have absolutely no intention. So how did the design review go in the end? Did you get lots of good ideas?
It was good. Lots of good ideas. Lots of practical sort of common sense advice, which is sometimes what you need as a developer when you have the ideas in your head and you're coming at it from a very technical point of view. Having someone just to say to you, listen, this isn't really what you do in the real world. Why are you trying to shoehorn that into an application? Brilliant. Really good stuff.
Yeah, just made you stop and think.
It gives you some perspective. You take a step back, just talking to someone. It's like when you're coding and you get stuck on something. Just talking to somebody else sometimes gives you a little bit of extra inspiration, a few more ideas. And it worked brilliantly. Obviously, Mike is very, very good at user interface design, usability. So just bouncing some ideas off him, getting some feedback from him, really, really valuable. And much cheaper than $1,000 an hour.
It was.
Yeah.
Because that would have cost you $500.
It would have done, yeah.
In real Mike Lee terms. So just before we carry on, it's worth saying that... is it worth saying? I don't know if that's the right phrase. I'm going to say anyway, whether it's worth saying or not, that John Fox can't be with us today.
Yeah.
Oh.
I'm filling in for the stuttering fool today.
You are?
Yeah. Feel free to edit me out.
At least you don't have to be the giggling retard. As we are.
I don't know, we might get two giggling retards this week.
Yeah. So John is still flying back from NS Conference. I think he's in New York at the moment, and it's his son's birthday. So we are going to allow him a short time off to do that. So we have the excellent Simon. We have no guest either, so Simon is going to be co-host and guest and chief bottle washer and tea maker, because basically I was at NS Conference and enough time to do anything. So so now the year's main conference is over. There's been an announcement about one of these secondary conferences today.
Something was mentioned today, but passed me by.
Was it WWDC or something?
Could have been. Yeah, that,
was it 6th to 10th of June, I think.
Yeah.
I know. There we are. $1,599. How do you say that in America? $1,599?
I don't know, but it's 999 proper sterling pounds.
And do we have to add VAT to that?
I have no idea.
Nor have I. I think I heard Graham say he may have had to have that. So, that's out. And once again, just as last year, even though there's more notice this year, because I think they're giving, a whole 10 weeks notice this year as opposed to 5, no early bird discount.
No.
So they're obviously expecting it to sell out.
They'll sell out, won't they?
Yeah.
All those iOS developers.
Yeah, so you think it's still going to be, even though we've got Lion on the horizon?
No, hopefully the content will be focused on Lion, but I guess that there are so many developers out there now that they'll flock over. I think probably with the number of iOS developers there are, the fact that the Mac App Store is out and will hopefully be promoted a bit more in Lion, I think they'll all go. They'll want to know about Lion. They'll want to know about converting their iOS apps to Mac apps. I think it'll sell out. I think it'll sell out fast. Are you going, Scotty?
You know we've had this discussion this afternoon, don't you?
I'm just rubbing salt in.
You know I've been sat here saying, I really want to go. I didn't go last year. But actually, it's just, by the time you come from the UK and you do flights and spending money and your ticket, you're looking at $4,000 to $5,000.
Yeah.
And, my wife wants a new kitchen. My children need clothes, and the place I am with development at the moment, it will be hard to justify that on a party. As much as I'd love to go and catch up with friends and spend time with people, which is the main reason I would go. If I was there struggling with loads of issues at the moment, development issues, not necessarily personal,
personal ones,
I would probably go in order just to get that week in the labs, just like we were saying.
Definitely.
And to do it. But the stuff I'm developing at the moment, it doesn't really justify that. So I've been sat here saying, I want to, but I can't. And I really am hoping it's sold out by the morning so that I don't
change
my mind. Yes, what about you?
No, sadly not for me this year. A bit like you, it's trying to justify the cost of doing it. I'd love to go because for the last year I have mainly been working on Mac applications. So going and learning about Lion would have been brilliant. However, I'm hoping they do what they did last year and within a couple of weeks, I think, of the end of the conference, all the videos were out there for free. So
yeah, you see, if they hadn't done that last year, I'd have been sat here thinking now, well, actually, yeah, I could really do with, you know, getting some of that Lion information. Maybe I think we'll hear some more about the Mac App Store, and I think there'll be some announcements about that there. But it's, you know, because they did put the videos, what was it, 2 weeks, three weeks?
About that, it was quick.
Last year, it's like, okay, they've sort of created an expectation that's going to happen again. Now, of course, if they don't this time, and it's 3 months, 4 months or something, and then they're not free.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of people complained about that last year.
Well, that was always half the thing. They used to charge, you know, $500+ for the videos. So it would cover a good chunk of the ticket of going anyway, getting those videos for free as opposed to having to buy them. Giving them away for free, you know, the main content of the conference is just handed to people. Great for the people who aren't there, but I can understand people who are there being slightly annoyed by it.
I know several people. Jeeva DeVoe said, you know, if he'd known they were going to come out so fast last year and be free, you know, he wouldn't have gone. So going to be, I don't know, it's going to be interesting. I think then we may not see the videos quite so quickly and we'll be sat there scratching our heads. Just seen in the chat room there, it's interesting to say that the Apple Design Awards for this year, it looked like they're going to be for iOS apps and Mac Store apps. So if you're not in the Mac Store, you don't qualify. That's
at least they're doing Mac stuff again.
Do you know what? I'd just be grateful to get my app out the door. It's been so many years, I don't care anymore if it's in the App Store or not in the App Store, whether it's got an ADC or whatever, an ADA. It's
just release it.
I just need to get out in this. So I've got an iPhone app in development and a Mac app, and I'd just love to get them both out there, as well as do the work for the other people I've got to do the work for. Right, so that's WWDC. It'd be interesting if when I'm on this time next week, it's all sold out.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, there's been lots of people on Twitter just saying, got it, booked my hotel, booked my flights, booked everything. So it's...
it's going fast.
It wouldn't surprise me. Well, NS Conference did it in 3 days, so they've, you know, but then again, they got 5,000 tickets. Mm. So if they sell that in 3 days, that will be really, really impressive.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. I don't know if I've told you this, Simon, but just as I sort of try and talk and do this at once, which is a bit multitasking, which isn't good for me, you are responsible for today's Cocoa Fusion. Well, oh, we're up to 25 viewers now as well, which is great. So howdy, viewers, to all 25 of you. This is a very personal service. This is my twin, Simon Wolf. He's just moved what I have here down to here. people who are just on the audio have no idea what's just been there.
They'll be slightly worried about what down here is, really, won't they?
Oh, dear. You're doing the stuttering fall very well. Cocoa Fusion, you're actually here because we're filming a course this week.
Yeah.
We thought we'd just do a quick 10-minute segment in the show about the stuff we're doing. So what are we talking about this week?
We're talking about Qt Kit, which is the Cocoa framework that sits on top of the old C-based APIs, the QuickTime APIs. It's Apple's sort of nice Cocoa layer that allows us to do video management and audio management. It's things like playback, editing, recording, and encoding.
Right, okay. So basically, if you want to be messing around with video, although I think we forget often audio as well. We've done it as well in those things. Qt Kit is the recommended way to go?
It's the recommended way to go. It's also comparatively the pain-free way to go.
Is anything about video and audio pain-free?
No, but this is about as good as you can get.
Right, so this is only having to pull a couple of fingernails out as opposed to the whole set.
This makes it fairly simple. If you've ever messed about with the old QuickTime framework, that's really horrible. It's sort of low-level C-based stuff, horribly, horribly complex. And this, in the Qt Kit, it's not as powerful. Obviously, you can't do everything that you can do with the old QuickTime framework, but probably for 95% of the things people might want to do, it'll do the job. It does all the basic editing, playback, very simple. Recording is not too bad through the QuickTime Capture stuff. And encoding and exporting, again, it's not bad. There are some restrictions. It doesn't make everything as easy. It would be nice to have it, but it's good. I mean, most people will find it will do what they need.
And we think we're talking, did we say 10.5 upwards?
Yeah, we think. I mean, that's sort of almost pretty much entirely off the top of my head. I don't know if someone in the chat room can tell us when Qt Kit was first introduced.
Yeah, anyone in the chat room want to do our job for us and tell us?
Someone
out there who can actually get to their browser without it having to look obvious that they're looking at their browser because they're not on camera at the moment.
I've got a disadvantage. Most people who do this segment can sit there looking at all their notes and everything else.
Well, you can look at your notes, they're just there.
Okay.
All right, so we think 10.5.
It's been around for a while, but when Snow Leopard came along was when Apple sort of said, this really is the preferred way of doing things over the old QuickTime framework. And they gave it a really big push in Snow Leopard. Snow Leopard, I think, was when they brought in a lot of the QuickTime Capture stuff, which was designed to allow you to capture video and audio through things like EyeSight, the external microphones, things like that. And they did a lot of demonstration apps of, just people doing simple recordings. They did stop motion videos and examples of things like that. So they gave it a big push. It's not a perfect solution. It would be lovely to be able to do things like record what's going on your screen through it. But you can't do that yet. It's just effectively external cameras and external microphones.
Right. Okay. I mean, obviously, this is Apple's framework.
Yep.
It's in there. It's a single framework.
Yes.
Like Chordata, so yep. It's just adding one
it's
thing
just
to it.
Qt Kit.
Okay. Playback. I'm guessing it allows you to play back video.
Yeah. Very simply, what you need to do is you create a Qt movie object and you load, for example, a video file into that object. Lots of methods to do that. I think off the top of my head, it's movie with file. You use, which means you can load the movie in. And then if you just want a very simple player in your application, there's a Qt movie view, which is a standard as you can get really Cocoa control, that you just drag into your view, drop it in, create an outlet to it, hook it up in Interface Builder. And then you just assign your movie object to that and that's it. And then you can start playing it. It's got a controlled strip on it. So you can play your video back, you can scrub through it. Very, very simple.
Cool. And obviously in the course we show all the code for this sort of stuff.
Yep.
I'm just going to get you to adjust your microphone a little bit because I think it's maybe a little bit low and maybe that's it. Now it's a few news. It's close, we'll see there. 10.4 is being suggested by Daniel Toll, but you didn't.
We weren't far off.
You weren't far
10.5, 10.5, yeah.
But I think it's like one of these frameworks that, in its first invocation, it probably didn't do a lot and probably didn't work very well. And one of the other things we've been looking at just today as we've been filming is the fact that it allows you to put playback into a core animation layer as well.
Yes, one of the really nice things is they've got a Qt movie layer. Which is a core animation layer that you again pass a movie into, which means that if you're doing your core animation based UIs, you're making your delicious application, it's very simple to put video playback into that. Now, the other nice thing with that is that you can do all the usual core animation effects. You can apply filters to it. You can move it around the screen. You can rotate it. You can also do other things like you can have two, layers and two movie views, and you can then pull the content out of a single movie and split it across those views. So if you had two, say side by side vertically, you could sort of split them open like doors opening, and the video would split down the middle, and it would look like video playing on either door and the thing swinging open. Similarly, you can go almost over the top. You could create 100 Qt movie layers, lay them out over your view, and you could then do segments of video in each of those and shuffle them all around. You could do some really smart
stuff.
So
this is how the video wall might be done.
It's how the video, I think with the video, most video walls are done in Quartz Composer, but yeah, you could simulate that effect. You're just taking chunks of the video and you're saying, this is what I want to display in this particular layer.
So for things like playback, mm-hmm. I mean, we're doing this without prep, so you might just sit there and look like a stuttering idiot. So for things like playback, what would going to the C API in QuickTime give me over just using Qt Kit? I mean, was it when you get outside of playback that QuickTime really begins to show us?
It's really outside of playback. The QuickTime C-based API is very powerful for things like encoding. If you want to take your video and you want to change its resolution and its frame rate and its bit rate and things like that, that's very good for that. And for editing, the QuickTime API tends to be a bit more robust for that. But mainly, the only time really I've ever had to dip down into it is for doing exports or re-encoding. Otherwise, for things like playback and for basic editing, things like chopping segments of movies out, you know, take a segment out of one movie and put it in another movie, putting some images in a movie sort of over a duration so you've got this static section in them. For things like that, QuickTime Kit is perfect, does the job really well. It just hides a lot of the complication. The flip side being that when you come to doing things like exports and re-encoding, where you may want the low-level control, you don't have that.
So if you can mix and match, so
yep.
I mean, you could always set out in your application to use Qt Kit, and then where you find it's not doing the job, drop down to the QuickTime
yes.
API. It's not an either or decision.
No. You can use them both. You can mix and match them. You can have a Qt movie object, and you can actually from that object drop down into the QuickTime API and use the QuickTime API against that object. So it's flexible. You can swap them around like that. Yeah.
I've just realized you're out of shot. People have just been saying, who's the stranger that I'm looking at here?
This half head.
So we're not good at camera stuff. We do audio. So, yeah, who cares? Right. What's going on in the chat room at the moment? Absolutely nothing. Okay. So, we can carry on talking then. That's fine. So, I mean, could I use Qt Kit to write, you know, something like iMovie, or is that sort of way above
its... you could get a certain way along the road of doing it. You could, for example, load in all your video clips. You can chop bits of clips out. You could take clips and join them together to create a new movie. So you could do a lot of the functionality. You'd have trouble. I mean, the value with something like iMovie is the fact that you've got the transitions and the fact that you can... edit those in, and you can create sort of a complete movie with credits and everything else. That's all beyond sort of the basics of Qt Kit. But in terms of taking source video or video files or audio, you can do that, and you can chop them and edit them and mix them together. And, you know, you can create a new empty movie object and take segments of other movies, which is effectively what iMovie does, okay. And create a new movie from that. So, yes, you could do sort of the basic editing side of it in there.
Now, Qt Kit is OS 10 only, isn't it?
It's not on iOS.
What would people use on iOS? Is it, or they have to go for...
Well, there's AV Foundation, which is being beefed up in iOS 4. It was in there before that, but it was really, really basic and mainly aimed at audio only. iOS 4 has seen some really, really good improvements to it, beefed up for video. And is probably in a lot of ways, it's a lot easier to use and in some ways more powerful than Qt Kit. I'm hoping that at some point, maybe we'll see some parity between the platforms. And Apple might, you know, hopefully in an ideal world, we'll start tying stuff together so we can start using the same code across the platforms. But who knows? Don't know what's coming yet.
Or is that a hope we don't know, but really we do know, but can't say anybody?
I couldn't possibly comment.
No. So really, again, we're saying, yeah.
The future's bright, hopefully.
But Qt Kit, maybe euthanasia.
I think Qt Kit will still be around, which is a good thing. But I think that some of the features that iOS enjoys and some of the simplicity that iOS has, particularly in terms of doing exports and encoding to the standard formats. Hopefully we'll see that on OS 10 soon.
See, this is interesting. I mean, I saw a tweet earlier today to which I think you disagreed with, and I said that in the future, maybe probably not with Lion, but maybe with, I don't know, Tomcat or whatever comes mm-hmm. after that, 10.8, 10.9, that we'll lose the OS 10 moniker altogether and become iOS desktop. And okay, you didn't think that was going to happen. I had no idea. Basically wasn't prepared to get off the fence on that one. But, you know, just the technologies, the way they are being drawn together, mm-hmm. and the way that actually it's no longer about does iOS support something I have on OS 10. It's you know, it's something that's iOS coming to OS 10 and going. You know, the platforms are merging so much that, you know, is that really far off, do you think?
No, I think it will happen at some point. And it would be good if it does, because it's going to benefit developers. It'll benefit us enormously. It's not, I don't think, going to happen for, well, another 3 years. I guess it's going to be 2-3 years before we see the next desktop operating system from Apple. But yeah, I think the frameworks will be merged. It makes sense to from their point of view, because it's saving them an awful lot of time and maintenance of disparate frameworks for different platforms. But unfortunately, I it's obviously not going to happen in Lion. Developers know that. Maybe the successor to Lion will see more commonality. Maybe it will see both merge into one operating system. I don't know how easily they could take the UI side of iOS and create an OS X or a Mac platform version of that.
And we don't want to end up in a situation where we can't get the best from our platform.
No, I think the operating system has to be focused on and targeted on, and its primary concern has to be to maximize the hardware it's working with. You know, in a lot of areas, iOS is deficient for a desktop operating system. So I think there will still be differences, but I think an awful lot of the first layer of frameworks below the UI could be merged and probably will be merged.
It's an interesting thought. It's good. We're in interesting times, and there's, interesting to know how many people are going to be coming from the iOS platform into the Mac OS X platform as these changes get closer and closer together. So, should we be, you know, expecting huge changes going forward in how we deal with audio and video, or is it actually things are going to be similar but just in a slightly different shell?
I don't think there will be huge changes conceptually. I think, you know, the underpinnings of it all, the fact that you have a movie and a movie contains tracks and those tracks are audio or video tracks, will carry on, because you fundamentally cannot change what sort of the broadcast and film industry has been built upon. What would be nice would be to see some more refinement of the frameworks that Apple provide for them. There are silly things like in QtKit. It's not as simple as it should be to say, here's my source video, I now want to export this so it'll work on an iPhone, and I want to do a version for the iPad, or I want to do a version for Apple TV. That sort of stuff needs to happen. We need to have that simplicity so people can start building applications where your video content can just be exported really, really easily to the standard formats that Apple wants people to use, which is also then going to drive sort of uptake and use of their own platform. It'll drive, in theory, sales of Apple TVs. Producing more content for iPads will, increase that. Well, not that they need much of an increase in their uptake, considering you can't get hold of one at the moment. But, you know, they can drive their own platforms forward, and they can make these video formats standards effectively. And I think that's probably where they should and probably are going.
Great. Well, I mean, I've been enjoying listening today to what you've got to say. We're only just sort of really at the beginning. Yep. We have a few days of filming left yet to do. It's not going to be a huge course, because actually it's not a huge framework, but we want to sort of make sure there's enough to really get people going. Yep. And we're going to be digging into the editing and the importing and the exporting. And I'm sure people realize where all your hair went when we get onto that.
Yes.
from that side of things. Someone was asking on the chat room now. I'm pointing at my screen like other people can see my screen, but in fact I've just realized no one even knows I'm pointing at my screen,
because
my finger is out of shot. Where are we going? There's my finger. It's now back in shot. When is it coming out? The answer is I don't know. We have such a backlog of video to edit at the moment with NS Conference and this, and we have about four other courses scheduled to be filmed over the next few weeks, that it will be sometime. As fast as we can is the answer. As fast as we can. Oh, Patrick Bilson's online. He was at NS Conference as well, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Hello, Patrick. Nice to see you. Or hear you. Well, I'll see your name anyway, even if we can't see you. Right. Okay. Now, totally out of the blue, because you've not been prepared for this at all. just like the last thing. We had a discussion on the show a few weeks ago about Git, graphical front ends, GUIs. There was a bit of Xcode 4 and a bit of command line and whatever else. And I think we are going to be doing at some point a proper review. But while you're on here as a guest, do you use Git first?
I do use Git.
I won't say we all love Git. Lots of us love Git. And I think the people who aren't using Git are using Mercurial, which is pretty close. I mean, I know the Mercurial users will be shouting at me now, telling me, no, no, you know nothing, which is nothing new there anyway. So, the concepts are similar enough that we can say that we are one family.
Yeah.
We're related.
As long as people are using a version control system.
SVN, you need to maybe,
evolve. Possibly.
But we're from the same species. So anyway, get rid of all that waffle because, I am the giggling retard, not the stuttering idiot. So I'm going to giggle now. what do you use a graphical front end to Git, or are you a command line?
No, I use actually two graphical front ends. I use Tower and I use Gitbox.
So two. Why two?
I used two because I started with Gitbox when Tower was still, it had been announced, but it wasn't out yet. Gitbox came out. It's very clean. It's very simple. It's very minimalistic. And it's very sort of quick and lightweight. And it feels like the sort of application you can just have running and you can dip into and out of, and you can see what changes you've made. And I like Tower because it's more flexible and it's got more power. Now, if Tower had one extra feature that Gitbox has, I may well ditch Gitbox and go to Tower all the time. But Gitbox, unlike Tower, allows you to also do diffs between local branches, which I find really useful because I don't create branches and then immediately send them up to GitHub. So although in Tower you can do comparisons between local and remote branches, you can't do local to local. That alone has kept me using Gitbox.
Right.
But I like it. If I want something that's clean and it allows me to see all my repositories at once, which again Tower doesn't, so I can see at a glance if, say, somebody else has committed any code to another of my projects. Whereas in Tower, it's much more you've got to go and check these things and you've got to see what's going on in your other projects. I'm sort of spoiled. I use both. I don't tend to use the command line, mainly just because I'm lazy and trying to remember all the commands that I want to use and make sure that I don't mistype things and get Git's sort of slightly sarky messages about, did you mean to type whatever? That just irritates me. And also because I wouldn't say I'm a Git power user. I don't use huge range of commands. I don't use, at the moment, sub-repositories. I don't do rebasing, things like that. So actually, pretty much everything that Tower and Gitbox offer is really, really all I need. I'm a bit like John. I'm standing in for him. I'm a bit like John. I don't have hugely demanding needs for what I do in Git.
No. That's interesting to know. Right.
What about you? Do you use
I've tried downloading a couple, but I keep finding myself back on the command line. One of the things I'm a little nervous of is I keep my Git repositories in Dropbox.
Right.
Which,
is this a good idea?
I don't know is the answer.
Okay.
It survives, I think, but I set myself a policy that I will only ever do Git adds, Git updates, Git push and pulls from one machine.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as I do that, it seems to stay okay. Now, because I also keep everything on GitHub, actually, to be honest, if it does screw up, it's not such a huge issue. I just clone it back again because I'm one of these, commit every 7 seconds type of people.
Yep.
Often I'd much rather have 75 small commits go through than one huge one at the end of the day. I have had a few problems that if I do some changes and on one machine, if you just do a git status, it gives you a different report of what's changed, what hasn't changed. So I tend just to keep on. Now, that may be just me doing that for my own security with absolutely no technical knowledge, and it means absolutely nothing, and everyone out there is laughing at me saying, you complete numpty. but until I'm shown otherwise. Now, if I start using a graphical user interface, I'm not sure where that fits in. Do I just do that from one machine? And my use of Git is so simple. Add, delete, branch, merge. I can remember those commands.
Yeah.
Obviously,
struggle. No, I struggle. I've got too much other stuff, important stuff going on up here, obviously.
Some of the projects I have worked on recently when I've been contracting have used sub-projects, sub-modules, not sub-projects, which I don't believe Tower, which was the main one I looked at, supported at the time. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it does now. I know it was scheduled.
You're the stuttering fool now.
Stuttering fool. That wasn't intentional, honest. Let's just see what the chat room is saying about this. People say, I keep them in Dropbox. That's fine. That's Daniel Toll. I'll just off to mend my Git. How can Dropbox screw your... okay, someone's worried about that. I don't know is the answer. I use Dropbox as well. Easy switching between my iMac and AirFort. Yeah, that's what I do. See, I developed during the day on my iMac in the office because I like the big screen. I've got multiple screens. It's only a base entry level iMac, a 3 gigahertz one from about 2009, maybe early 2010. I can't remember. 12 gig of memory, which really helps. And that's great. And that's what I work on all day. But then, the contracts I'm working on at the moment as well, I work as part of a team that's mainly based in the US. And so, they're not necessarily online when I'm working during the day. So at 10 o'clock at night, I might get back online. Yeah. I might do some changes. We talk over campfire, using propane. People should definitely go check out propane if you use campfire. Stop it. and so then I might do some more changes in whatever else. So what I've made the decision, I actually do all the commits and everything from my laptop because that's the machine I'm always going to have with me and my iMac isn't. As I said, I have no reason to suspect that Dropbox destroys Git repositories at all, other than I think I read it somewhere. Mm-hmm. And the naive person I am, I believe it until someone shows me that's not true. And the other thing I say is if you do issue a Git status on the different machines, they will tell you different things.
So why don't you do the more traditional thing and commit from one machine, push it up to the server, switch over to your other machine and pull the changes down?
Because that requires me to be organized.
Okay.
And sometimes I'll be sat here, I'll be doing some coding, I then need to go because I always leave everything to the last minute, so I'll head off to the station or somewhere else. I just hit save in Xcode, I go there, and when I get wherever else, I just open the lid on my laptop, give it a couple of seconds with the spinner, and do it again, whereas if I had to post it up, and I'd think, well, I didn't do that, did I? So do I. This is the easy option if it works.
Yeah.
I've never lost a repository yet. And by the fact that I do regularly push to GitHub, I say I always feel, well, I might lose a morning's work, but I just reclone from GitHub and everything's back again if it has screwed up.
Okay.
So that's what I say. David Spector is saying online that he thinks there used to be an issue with Mac file metadata, which Dropbox fixed a year ago. So that could be true. There's a script to use Dropbox as a server, and it's pretty cool. Daniel Tull is pointing out as well. Yeah, I think I read that the other day, that you can actually use Dropbox as, install Git and make it the central server. We'll find a link for that and maybe put it in the show notes. Right, okay, how are we doing for time? Oh, just a few minutes left. We ought to... time is fly. Doesn't time fly when you're enjoying yourself?
We're having fun, yes.
Assuming you're enjoying yourself, yeah. Don't say anything to
I'm too polite to...
Okay, so at Innis Conference, we raffled off an iPad 2.
Yep.
This was a couple of days before iPad 2 was released in this country. It was very generously donated by Saul Mora, who brought it over from the US with him. A white 16 gig Wi-Fi. So what are they, about $500?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so $500. Yeah. And we made $3,000 in the raffle from it. And it was won by Constantine. I can't remember his surname. He was in the loo at the time we did the draw.
Yes.
And everyone wanted me to redraw. That is the state of our community. Everyone wanted me to redraw. There
Terrible.
We are. No, but we waited for him to finish his business and come back to the room.
Hope he washed his hands.
I did the presentation. So congratulations to him. But we raised almost $3,000 or somewhere around $3,000 for
Brilliant.
That's going for Save the Children, Japan. Mm-hmm. Japan, so that's great. So that was a good bit of charity work. But obviously, the last 2 months, we've been doing Developers Against Poverty.
Yep.
Just as we've been on air, we've cranked across the $58,000 mark.
Excellent.
Which is fantastic. It ends on the 31st of March, so by the time you listen to this, it could be over. If you're listening live and you've got 3 or 4 days, we hope to get this out soon. The amount of editing we've got to do, I'm not going to make Dave any commitments for Dave. But it will end on the 31st of March. There's a reason for that, that Charity Water, every 3 months, draw down funds and start doing projects. As opposed, you know, they do it on a quarterly basis. And the end of March is the end of their quarter, which means all those funds will get, anything that are available, any campaigns that are finished will get drawn down, projects will get assigned and it will go out. So if we don't end on the 31st of March, it will be another quarter till the money gets used. And so as I had to choose an end date, I thought, well, why not the 31st of March? So on the end of 31st of March, that money will get drawn down and Charity Water will begin to use it. So I just want to say thank you to everyone who has donated so far, the 166 people, which I am confessing.
But wait a minute, who have we got in the chat room? Because somebody in there surely can just pledge the last $2,000 to get us up to a round number.
They've just spent all their money on their WWDC tickets, probably.
Probably. But if they can afford to go to WWDC. Yeah, that's true.
So someone in the chat room could give us more. Anyway, I'd love to reach 60,000. 75,000 was my revised target.
Yep.
I don't think we're going to get there. But, you know, that was a revised target, so we hit the 50,000. There's 166 people donated. That's one I'd love to get up, actually. I'd love for more people to get involved. I don't care if it's a dollar or $5 or $3, anything. You know, a cup of coffee. Tomorrow, instead of having a cup of coffee, give the money to Developers Poverty. You know, I'd love a couple hundred more people, even if it's a dollar, and we only got by $200 to get in there, just to get this sense that actually lots of people got involved.
Yeah.
Because that's what it's about to me. It wasn't necessarily the sum of money that we raised, although we had a fantastic, you know, some fantastic donations. The guys at Macroscope gave all their profits from Copilot, you know, the Expo plugin for a month.
Brilliant tool.
To it. Obviously, the Omni Group gave a fantastic donation of $35,000. We've had quite a few donations of $1,000 plus, which is really, really generous.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's fantastic. But it wasn't necessarily just a sum of money that was made me set Developers Against Poverty up. It was this sense of a community can do something together. And, you know, 166 people getting involved is fantastic, but I'd like more.
Okay.
I'm going to be honest. I think, you know, it would be a better reflection on the community if there were a few more. So, and I know lots of you won't even hear this before the 31st, so it's there. So I'm just going to say, developersagainstpoverty.org. Go give a dollar, $2, $3.
People in the chat room, go and tweet about it.
Yeah,
tell
tweet
people,
about it.
$5, $10, it all helps.
Yeah, I don't care, $1. Just be, just be able to say, I gave to Developers Against Poverty. I got together with my developer community and gave to Developers Against Poverty. That's all I ask. Come on, it's a buck.
Yep.
Yeah. I know there's thousands of people who listen to this podcast. I know not everyone's in a position to. Some are in countries where you can't even get a credit card. So, I mean, I'm not asking the impossible. But if you are in a country where you have water and roof over your head and, you know, broadband, whatever else, you can find a dollar or two from somewhere and give Developers Against Poverty. And take us up to that 60,000 would be great. We're at $58,054 at this moment in time. Right, okay, I think I've probably twisted enough arms with that one. Simon, it's been really, really good.
It's been lovely to
have having someone in the studio.
I think I say the
studio, you're at my desk.
Am I the first person?
You are the first live guest, and it's so nice to have someone here.
But haven't you missed the Skype issues?
I've missed the Skype issues and having to deal with them. We have the stupid thing is we've upgraded our bandwidth and now there's no one online.
Didn't need to.
There we are. When I say upgraded, you know, it's the best our town can do. We now have two pieces of string instead of one. It's about where we're at. I mean, I was on Campfire the other day and one of my colleagues from Texas sort of put his speedtest.net stats up, you know, and he was, you know, something like 35 meg down, 35 meg up, and yeah, we're here with we've upgraded to 800k up, and we're at 6.5 meg down because we're in County Bollockshire, as John would say.
County Bollockshire, I don't know what that means. But, I'm in with my three megs, so
Simon lives even, you know, further down than Bollinger.
Yeah, yeah, we won't even describe what's down there.
So there we are. Anyway, where were we going? Sam, remind people of who you are, and you've got a blog that you occasionally write to, haven't you?
Yep, far too infrequently. I'm Simon Wolfe. My company is Otter Software, and the blog is at ottersoftwareblog.com.
Brilliant. And I'm Scotty, Mac developer. No, I'm not that anymore, am I?
It's been a long week.
Maybe this is why my marketing campaigns don't work very well. I am from iDeveloper TV, I think. And we're filming a introduction to Qt Kit.
Yes.
Course this week at iDeveloper TV. I'm Mac DevNet on Twitter. But above all, I want you to visit developersagainstpoverty.org. Not developers for poverty. Saying at NS conference, developers for poverty. Developersagainstpoverty.org. Right. Okay. I have to try and do this while everyone's watching me on camera, but I am going to say thank you very much for tuning in. Chat room, you have been great today. We have totally ignored you on the whole, but, you've been there and you've been chatting amongst yourself, and we do thank you for coming along and listening to this waffle live. To those of you doing it on the iTunes feeds, we love you just as much. Until next time, you take care. Thank you.